Hi, I'm Masaba Gupta. Each week on How I Masaba from Luminary, I talk to one incredible woman about how they do, well, them. These are the inspirational mindsets, necessary daily practices, and only funny in hindsight experiences that have defined and continue to drive our culture's greatest. You know, with a lot of celebrities, there is conversation about the platform that they have and them using their voice for good. My guest today is someone who's put in the work and is using her platform with so much grace. She is a vocal proponent of inclusivity and representation, especially of the South Asian community on the global stage. An actor who is an inspiration to young people across the world. Oh, and did I mention that she's managed all of this at the ripe old age of 21? Today, I'm speaking to Maitri Ramakrishnan.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Krishnan. Maitri, thank you so much. We're so excited because I think you've just sort of burst onto the scene. And I must tell you that here in India, we're huge fans. But I wanted to get your take on this because you're currently living bang in the middle of it. How different do you think your life would be as a 21-year-old if you were not in a public profession?
I'd like to think I'd be like kind of the same. Actually, I take that back. I wouldn't. I feel like my...
You would.
No, because I feel like my job, like, you know, being just like, you know, thrown into Hollywood and thrown into like being a public figure has made me mature faster in a way that I've had to mature faster. It's not like a, oh, I'm so wise now and I'm some amazing human being. It's just the nature of my job has forced me to grow up a little bit faster, which kind of sucks. You know, because I like being young and a kid. I've never been someone to try and grow up fast. So maybe in that way, I would be different. And I would have just grown in other ways, you know. But I think the experience of being thrown into, you know, public, like being a public figure has really made me, you know, consider things that I don't think I would have if I didn't. If that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. But do you also, are you conscious of the fact that you are a public person and the fact that, you know, you're perceived in the media a certain way? Does that get on, like, is that on your mind?
Yeah, it definitely is on my mind because I think in the beginning, it used to be like too much on my mind. Like I'd be so worried about like how I looked and everything, like so much so I wouldn't go out just to like, I don't know, go like grocery shopping if I didn't like have makeup on and everything. But I before was the kind of person that would like, you know, happily go out in sweats and like not care. But then I started caring because my brain started overthinking and, you know, was like, oh, what if some fan takes a picture of me and I look really bad? You know, like that's what I thought like back when I was 17. And then I started getting scared about going out. Just because I was like, oh, that's scary. I don't know. People could recognize me and like stalk me. I don't know. But now I don't care. Now you don't care. Now I'm like, I need to let my skin breathe and I can't, you know, do my hair every day. That's just not possible. Right? But no, I'm very
yeah,
much
I
so
agree. I feel like my skin never breathes because I'm always in hair makeup mm-hmm. and I'm just like, let it breathe.
Yeah.
Let it be.
But even you know? Aside from like, I guess like, the glam of it all, no, definitely, like, I'm aware about how I'm perceived in, like, media, especially as a brown woman, let's be real, you know, just say that off the bat, because it's different, you know, expectations and so many opinions. That was definitely the biggest thing. Learning to not care about everyone's opinion. I'm still learning that.
Oh, I tell you, it's going to be a lifelong journey. It's going to be long. But is there something that you do? Is there a ritual that you have where you
just consciously spend time to drown out all of the noise that comes with being who you are?
Probably hug my dog. Just hug my dog.
The best.
No, hug my dog, actually, for real, because my dog calms me down. But also just, like, you know, hang out with my friends, hang out with my family, people who just know the turd that I am and just know that I'm...
Before you became the superstar
exactly.
that you are.
And, you know, the people who know that I'm still a potato. I actually haven't changed. Like, I just really am a potato. It's kind of funny when all of my friends, they like sort of laugh if they see someone come up and get really shy to talk to me. Because to them, they can't fathom why someone would be so like excited and happy to talk to me, because they would probably want me to just go away. So they're real friends.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, that's definitely, I think, the best things that I do to ground myself. And then just watch stuff like, you know, TV shows and like, you know, cartoons that I like. I feel like being in the industry, there's so much pressure of like, have you seen this show? Have you seen this actor do this thing? Oh my God, like, these are your fellow colleagues, blah, blah, blah. But like,
you must know what's happening
exactly.
in the industry.
And I just like to watch anime and cartoons, and that's it. I like to rewatch movies that I've already seen before, and that brings me peace. So, yeah, that's
that. That is good. Peace is good. That's good that you focus on peace. Now, you've spoken about how your breakthrough role happened by chance, right? And you were not a trained actor. And this is my theory, right? So I've done a little show that's kind of like a mockumentary, and I play myself. My mom plays herself. It's on Netflix as well. I remember getting a lot of praise when that show came out, season one came out. And I feel like when I saw it, I said, I have the baggage of being a trained actor. And I say that because what happens is that when you're not trained in the field, you kind of are spontaneous.
Yeah. It works to our advantage.
And you're kind of like brave. You're like,
yeah,
you know,
it kind of works to our advantage because we're in a way not overthinking all of the minute details, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I remember my director was telling me, and she said, do you not want to look at the monitor? Oh. I said, no, what's that?
Yeah.
Like, I just did my scene. You know, if you like it, I like it. Did you feel like you were course correcting as you went, or were you just being spontaneous and brave and seeing how it went?
I think, like, so while we were filming, I did get paired up with like an acting coach to just go over like the scripts and whatnot. But I think the thing that gave me the most amount of growth was truly just the idea of trusting, which can, like, you know, be scary, of course, because it's, and yet again, I think this worked to my advantage because I have never been on screen. So I realize how big of a deal it is to have your whole face, you know, and your existence. Like, as an actor, you're giving your existence as a real human being into a fake fictional character, or, you know, whatever it is that you're portraying, right? So I think because I didn't understand how big of a deal that is, I was very trusting of other people's guidance. And thankfully, I was in a good environment with, like, you know, people that were looking out for me genuinely.
Meant well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I definitely course corrected and learned on the job. I think one of my favorite things to tell people is like, oh, watch season three. Yeah, season one, I'm pretty
you're
shit.
Raw and like...
Yeah, I'm pretty shit. I think, too, in season one when that came out, that was when I learned the term green. I can't even remember which review it was, but one review said, like, despite my tray being green, I'm like, is your TV okay? Like, why is it green? And then I was like, oh, that means new. Got it. Yeah, I learned a lot of things along the way.
I learned something new just right now.
Yeah, being green means, like, you're a little new to the screen. But anyways, point is, definitely learned on the job. Lots and lots of learning from watching others. You know, like my cast members and whatnot. Like, I think the first crying scene I ever did was with Sandal. And it was the scene where, like, Davy's crying about, you know, feeling like, is she too ugly? And Sandal was just the nicest human being because I was very nervous about learning how to cry on command and I didn't feel like I could do it. And he totally supported me. Also, like every day of the first season, I had either Mindy or Lang Fisher, the other creator of Never Have I Ever, always giving me amazing notes, amazing guidance. So I was like really supported, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's great because, you know, you have lots of actors who have decades of experience.
Yeah.
And sometimes they say, I remember I was talking to one of the actors in India in Bollywood, and she was telling me, she called me, she said, how do you do that scene in season one? I've been doing this for 20 years and I haven't been able to crack it, you know? But I said, I think I just haven't, like with me, because I'm also a designer and an entrepreneur, I just don't think like an actor. I just don't have that fear of, oh my God, am I looking okay? And is this cheek better than that cheek?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when people ask me, like, do you have a better side? I'm like, I don't know. I'd like to assume both sides of my face are decent, that they are passable. So, yeah, I get that. I used to think, though, you know, I used to think like, oh, like, I'm just showing up and I don't have any method. Like, I'm just getting, like, lucky. But then I started giving myself more credit because I know when I go on to set and I'm doing a sad scene, and then I had a really happy day, like I'm actually happy, but the scene's really sad. I'm like, oh, that's acting. Okay, I'm doing the thing, you know? I gotta give myself credit. I'm not actually really sad. I'm actually quite happy right now, but I'm making this whole moment very sad because I'm doing the craft.
You're
doing, you know,
the craft, yeah.
Doing the craft.
That's true. And you gotta give yourself credit because it's a hard job and it's also physically very taxing.
Draining. It is. Yeah, I just run on adrenaline all through my life. That's it. Just adrenaline.
I want to also talk about how many of Devi's quirks come from you. Right? You're telling the producers that she wouldn't eat, you know, certain kind of food with cutlery. We eat with our hands. We love our hands. Your personal experiences have had such a big influence on the character. What struck me about it is that obviously the confidence you carried with you at a very young age to be able to contribute with these gems, but also the environment that you had on set, right? It seems like everyone felt very comfortable sharing ideas, opinions, suggestions, and the results, of course, are for the world to see. I want to ask you if you can put your finger on what it takes to create these environments where individuals are just allowed to sort of share and collaborate and come together.
Yeah. I think the biggest reason, like, yeah, definitely, I'm very easily able to put my finger on what factor it is that helps create that environment. And it's, you know, huge credit to Mindy and Lang. Being the, you know, creators that they are, they, you know, figure out who else they want to employ and who else they want to bring on as leaders of departments. And then those leaders bring on, you know, their team of good people that work well together and create that environment, right? It's that trickle-down effect of, you know, leading and creating leaders within the team. So that's definitely the biggest reason, for sure. I am very blessed, not even just for the idea of getting Never Have I Ever as a lead role, as my first role, not even that, but getting the kind of environment. I think often people say to me like, oh, you're so lucky. Your first role was a lead role on like such a hit show. But I was also very lucky for the environment. Because if the environment wasn't that great and it wasn't what it was, then I don't think the show would have been what the show is today. So they go hand in hand, right? I lucked out definitely for both. I'm very spoiled now. But yeah, I've always felt, I never felt like at 17, season one, that I couldn't explain or bring an idea. And if they thought my idea was bad, I feel like they would like tell me, but like in a nice way, but they would also be like, they'd be like, yeah, okay, we can try that. And then be like, okay, we're done. We're never trying that again. I'm like, cool, 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 cool. Wasn't even married to it. I don't even care. But yeah, they definitely, also the writers are really good at watching like the entire cast because they put our like isms in there. You know, they put our like, they definitely put in our quirks, for sure. Like, I'm a finger guns kind of person. And then quite often, as seasons went by, Davey gives a lot of finger guns. And I've always been this way. I don't like to be told. Like, I don't like feeling nervous. I don't like feeling scared. So as soon as I recognize in life that I feel scared, I have to do whatever it takes to tackle that. So if I feel nervous to bring up an idea or say something in a group, I hate that. Because I, in my head, will say, no, 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 we're not doing this. No, 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 none of this anxiety of, you know, saying your opinions and your feelings. Speak up. So if it comes to saying, like, you know, hey, can we, like, get rid of the forks and spoons? Like, if that's all right, I think it'd be cool if we ate with our hands. Like, yeah, of course, in a respectful manner. I'm not, like, you know, screaming at people. But I'm going to bring it up because I know if I don't bring it up, it will eat at me the entire time because my brain will say, you should be saying something. Oh, no, now it's too late. Time's ticking. So, yeah.
That's amazing. That's very inspiring because I think what happens is when we're, I mean, I'm 34 and I still think like sometimes these days have gone by and I don't speak my mind. And it's amazing that you have that kind of clarity at that age because that's amazing.
It's very easy, though. Like, I get a huge, huge privilege of being able to have other South Asian actors on set with me and help me, you know, convey my ideas to you. When it comes to, like, you know, talking about cultural things, just because, you know, you mentioned about, you know, eating with your hands and stuff. And that definitely helps because you don't feel necessarily so alone or, like, out there. You're not absolutely crazy out of your mind for doing something that's very normal and more realistic, right? Also, no one intimidates me, like starstruck wise.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I don't get starstruck by anyone because all I need to do, and none of that like picture people naked, none of that. I just need to remember the fact that they've probably have had diarrhea before. Like, we've all had diarrhea, you know? And that makes us all human.
Not verbal diarrhea. You're talking about the actual, like...
No, I'm talking about, like, actual diarrhea. Like, just, like, hear me out here, right? Like, Beyonce, she's had diarrhea. I guarantee you. Right?
Okay.
I've had diarrhea. Okay. You probably had diarrhea. And that's all okay. Yeah. Because we're all just human. And... all of us, just no matter how many accomplishments or how many things we might succeed at, we've all had to sit in the toilet for a little bit longer than normal. And that's okay. So, why wouldn't I just hold on to that and remember that, yeah, we're just human.
But that's interesting, you know, that you visualize someone having diarrhea and you're
like... I'm not, like, thinking about them. Putting that picture in my mind.
I know what you mean. But this is a great tip, by the way. It's a great tip.
Just the fact. It's just the fact. Not the visual. We don't need the visual. I'm not trying to...
The visual is even better because that just is like, I'm so confident right now.
I'm not trying to get comfortable with so many people like that. That's okay. I'm fine. But...
Maitri, that's amazing. That's an amazing tip. I love that.
Yeah, we all deserve respect, right? So I deserve equal respect. No one's better than me or below me. That's weird. Yeah, we're all just humans trying to live.
But, you know, I had a thought and I wanted to know what you thought about it. So I work in fashion, right? And what I'm seeing increasingly is that suddenly the curvy girl is in vogue, right? And she's trendy and the brown skin girl is trendy. And it's almost like when we're casting... if you don't cast the big girl or you don't cast the girl who's darker skinned or who has like acne or like scars or some kind of, you know, a flaw, as they call it, which I don't see as a flaw, I almost feel like you get called out for it. And what's happening is that the skinny girl or the girl who was like the quintessential model is almost sort of getting trolled. But do you see that? Do you see that happening? Because I see that the tokenism, yeah. Do you see that? And how would you want to bring about that shift? Because I know it's our time. Brown girls are winning, right? Okay.
Yeah.
But how do we bring about equality in the world?
I mean,
especially in an industry like ours, which is very, very, it's all vanity.
100% all vanity. But I mean, okay, the blunt truth is that the quintessential model, the, you know, Eurocentric beauty standard of a woman, let's just speak about women here, before bringing men into the conversation, because that's a whole other thing. But the quintessential, you know, beauty standard, Eurocentric beauty standard of a woman will always have a role. Like, she's doing fine. You know, she's doing okay. She will be all right. I think sometimes, and don't get me wrong, tokenism sucks because it actually doesn't help us either, because sometimes we can just play, you know, a one-dimensional, nothing to really offer kind of role. Like, let's address even within the, you know, the different minority cultures of racial backgrounds, there is still a lens of Eurocentric beauty standards, right? Because in casting, they might take the brown girl, you know, over the white girl, but are they taking the brown girl with the, you know, bigger nose? Or are they taking the one with the more cute button nose? Right? There is still, like, you can unpack the layers and layers and layers of it. And truly, I feel like it just makes everyone feel like crap. It makes the person who gets the role have more imposter syndrome, potentially. It makes people who are watching it, depending on whether they have their own internalized racism or internalized misogyny, whatever it may be, they might feel like crap, right? And the, you know, model, like, white girl might feel like, ah, oh, the world's against me. I have no opportunities. And
yes.
Feel so sad and feel like crap. Everyone just feels like crap because everyone wants representation. A matter, I think, of, I mean, how do you solve it? How do you move forward and fix it? I think it's A, definitely in regards to our industry, about the behind the scenes, who's writing the stories. I feel like when you put people of color in, you know, positions of power within the writing room or the producing, like, you know, like the producers or directors, like, that totally helps, right?
That's amazing. That's amazing that you're aware of that and that you're, that's something that's front and center of your mind. That's amazing.
Yeah, that was a really long-winded answer, though. I realized that.
That's
it's just such a big conversation, right?
No, but you're right. It's almost like there's so many thoughts, right, about it. And I keep thinking about it. And I'm just like, I can never put it down.
Because, I mean, even though they might cast someone of color, right? First of all, are they being cast as the lead role or are they being cast as the best friend? If they're being cast as the lead role or the best friend, whatever, are they conventional for the box that fits that project, right? Like, whether that's, you know, the facial features, is it the lightness of skin where it's like, oh, they've got just enough, you know, just enough melanin, which is messed up. I feel like when I think about all this stuff, my brain goes into hyperdrive because there's just so many things to think about, and then it just makes me feel
meh. Okay, let's step away from the actor. Let's step away. How do you go about finding the best people to surround yourself with? And I'll tell you an example. I'll give you an example of myself where, you know, when you're talking about agents and people that work with you, work closely with you, I feel like it's very important to know that, yes, you're working with people who can actively go and find work for you. But at the same time, are also not just throwing you into stuff because they have an agenda.
I think for me, when it came to, like, you know, finding my team and putting people together, it was definitely, I'm a very much so, like, energy kind of person. Like, I will, when I meet you, like, it's all about, like, can you look me in the eye clearly? Are you trying to just, like, you know, kiss up to me? Are you just trying to just talk the talk and say words you think I want to hear, right? I'm a very, like, blunt person. I, like, having conversations that are straight up. We get to the point and we be strategic. I need people that can strategize with me. I need people that can be honest and blunt with me. We can have a good cry if things go down and then pick ourselves right back up. Because that's how I roll, right? So I think those are definitely big factors. And then, yeah, people who understand me, people who understand the messy conversation that we just had, you know, that get it, that they, you know, they see like, okay, these are the things Maitreyi cares about. Like, this is important to her.
You have an amazing life outside of what you do, right? So outside of the glamour and the glitz, you've managed to have friends outside of the business. You get along very well with your co-actors, crew members, and of course your producers as well. Do you think there's a big difference in the approach to navigate both these worlds, or is it kind of similar, the approach?
I think the core of it is similar. Like, the core for me is the same, and that's all about like just leading with honesty and being like doing the good and right thing, right? The best to what I can do. Because we might not always do the right thing, but we could at least try, right? So I feel like in my like work life, I always try to do the right thing and I make conscious choices. And sometimes that can get very like emotionally taxing and can get very overwhelming in my head, make things a little fuzzy. But in my personal life, I do the same thing. Just do the right thing and try to be the best you can be. If you mess up, we'll fix it. But I think the core is the same. But then there are of course, factors that are different, right? For me, my job is my job. And a friend of mine and I literally talked just the other day about how we don't make it our biggest thing. Like, I always make sure that I have other things, whether it's, and I'm not saying like I have crazy, crazy hobbies, like whether it is just watching anime and cartoons, that's something else that I love to do. My cousins and I, we love going to restaurants and just eating food and trying new places. That's something else that brings me joy. Nothing brings me more joy than being on a set. That's where I'm happiest. I will turn down a trip to Disney World if I could go onto a set, right? But I try to have other loves. I think, though, with friends outside of work, ever since Never Have I Ever, that's been a little interesting just because, like, you know, figuring out who to trust. That was definitely
that's a tough one always.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? I hate it because I wear my heart on my sleeve.
I'll take your word for it. If you're telling me something, I will take your word for it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I can be pretty stupid.
Truly. Yeah. I don't want to go through heartbreak. I don't betray my trust, please.
In the end, we win. The ones who wear their heart on their sleeve win.
We win after a lot of tears, though.
A lot of tears. A lot of heartbreak, but we win. Yeah.
Yeah. It's constantly, like, if I get disappointed by something that I'm like, I should have saw that coming. But I don't live with regret of wearing my heart on my sleeve. But that's how it is.
I have a theory about like disappointment, which I just discovered as of day before yesterday. I feel like it's such a wasted emotion. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's the one emotion that all human beings should actively try and get out of. Because I feel like that energy that's going towards the disappointment of something not working out or heartbreak or whatever, anything that has disappointment, not anger, I feel like it could be channelized into other areas that could actually help you.
That's true. I mean, like, yeah, what does disappointment yield, really?
Yeah, nothing.
Like, the feeling,
keep,
like,
it'll keep going on, right?
Yeah. If you feel out your anger, you can feel a release.
And it's a cycle. It never ends. It'll keep coming back and it'll keep sort of lingering on, right?
Yeah.
Now, you've made a very conscious choice to use your image to speak about issues that are close to your heart. You've become a role model to so many people, especially young women across the world. I want to ask you, when you were younger, were there any role models that had that kind of impact on you?
Yeah. Off the bat, I would say Emma Watson. Emma Watson when I was a kid. Also because of like Hermione Granger. Because as a kid, I feel like this is pretty common. But you don't really separate a character from actor because you forget that an actor exists because you're just watching a show as a kid and you're like, wow, this is real. Like, that's a real wizard, you know? Like, the concept of celebrity, too, is a little, like, untouched as a child, I think. At least it was for me. But, yeah, I really loved Emma Watson, for sure. Just because I thought Hermione Granger was super smart and Emma Watson was super smart. And, you know, hearing about how she would fight for girls' education, I was like, wow, that's so cool. Like, I don't know, like, as a kid, I didn't know, like, the details or anything. But, like, just that idea of this cool character, right, who I felt I really resonated with. And then there's this, like, cool, you know, beautiful woman that's also doing that in the real world, too, while being creative as an actor, right? I was like, that's pretty awesome. So I would say Emma Watson, like, as a kid. Now I have definitely, like, other role models for sure, like Mindy, you know, Mindy Kaling, of course, and Michelle Yeoh.
But Emma Watson was the beginning of it all. But if you had to look forward today, what would you like to accomplish through your journey? So think of yourself as at the end of your career and then look forward and say, what would you like to accomplish just at this very moment?
Of course, taking on more characters. I love acting so much, and being able to play characters that are like me, that aren't like me, that would be the dream. Just more characters that make people feel seen, you know? And just being a part of projects that make you really feel something, right? That I want to one day have that moment where someone goes to the theater, they watch the movie, and then they like hop into their car and they put on the soundtrack because it like moved them that much. That's what I want, right? That moment of like, wow, that really like changed how I felt walking into the movie theater versus how I left. So I want to be a part of stuff like that. And then be a part of stuff like that in the capacity eventually of like producer or like, you know, director, who knows? I one day want to be on Sesame Street. Now that we're getting into more specific dreams.
Yes.
Be on Sesame Street. That would be awesome. I love Cookie Monster. I don't think it would be getting like an Oscar or an Emmy, but I think it would be getting my own Ben and Jerry's flavor. If I had my own Ben and Jerry's flavor, I've made it. I don't know if anything would top that at that point. Like,
wow.
Right? Wow. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Now, there's some questions I have to know, and you can be as short or as elaborate. I like to call it like a quick round of questions.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool.
Okay. What was the moment when the penny dropped and you realized, shit, people recognize me now?
Maybe the first time I got recognized, and it was at a park, like in my area. I'm hanging out with my friends, and this girl comes up to me and is like, hey, are you the girl on Never Have I Ever? And then I said, no, sorry, I'm not.
You said no, sorry?
And then I said, yeah, that's some other brown girl. No. And then I walked away. And then I went back and I was like, no, it is me. I'm pranking. I'm so sorry. I feel so bad that I did that to that person. Because it was the first time I got recognized. And I think I just, like, I didn't know how to react. So, and it felt like awkward. And I was like, okay, comedy time. But maybe I made her feel really embarrassed. Maybe I made her, she was like a white girl. Maybe I made her think she was like a racist for a second. And that's pretty rough because she identified me with a mask. It was the pandemic. So she actually has very sharp eyes. She wasn't being racist. She doesn't think all brown girls look the same. But I made her feel like that for a second.
A lot of Never Have I Ever to be able to recognize you through the mask.
Yeah. So that was the first time when I just gaslit some poor girl.
What's the weirdest reaction you've got from your friends or your family when they have seen you on screen?
It's not like weird. It was kind of funny. in season one, when Davy's running away to like the beach, she's like running and she's trying to like call out to, you know, Kamala and Nalini. She's running. My friends love to comment on my run. They love to make fun of my run. Every time that scene would come up, they would just start running and yelling, "Did I miss it?" Because of Davy's yelling. So that's definitely like a funny reaction to me. But it wasn't unexpected. I knew my friends were going to make fun of my run. I saw this coming and I knew it. Jaren, who plays Ben, Jaren Lewison, also loves to make fun of my run. So it is what it is. Maybe I'll start, you know, getting a personal trainer and I learn how to actually run. And
make a supermodel run.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Let me get a Baywatch run up in here.
And the last question, what's the worst advice you've received in your career? I think the best advice, we've got tons. What's the worst thing someone's ever told you to do?
That's good. That's good. There. Oh, man. No one's the ever finale. Asked me this. Oh, this is good. Okay. Names unmentioned, but someone gave me some pretty unasked for advice. I definitely didn't ask for it because in true auntie fashion, it started with her saying, "Can I give you some advice?"
And aunties, I love aunties.
Oh, don't you love that opening? Can I give you some advice?
As if you'll say no and they will shut up.
Right? Like, in a public area in the middle of a conversation with so many people. So, yeah, I'm totally going to say no. Bye. So I say, yeah, like, sure. And then I get told, you know, you got to get yourself out there. You got to just do all these things. And, you know, you need to figure out what's going to happen next. Because if you don't figure out what you're going to do next, people are going to forget about you. You'll be a one-hit wonder. And that will be that. And this is like in a group of people too, which really sucked. And I'm sure as you understand, imposter syndrome is so real. And constantly when you're being asked, like, what do you have next? What do you have next? When you don't have something next, you feel sometimes pretty useless. You know, unless you are really sure of yourself and you really know who you are and you're comfortable with yourself, you feel like maybe you are being forgotten. And the advice here is basically like, yeah, you need to get the next thing because your steam will run out and no one will remember you. And I was like, okay. Well, in the moment, that made me feel like crap. I was like, oh my God, like, you're totally right. I'm so done. But I still don't want to do, you know, work just to work. I want to do work that I can put my heart into. And my agent always says, good work is good work. And no matter how busy you are, if it's crap, it's crap. But when you have good work, people will remember that. And it has much longer, you know, shelf life for your career than anything else. So my thing is, I will only do good work and projects that I can put myself into and like emotionally, my heart. I believe in it, right? So I think that was the most shitty advice because I think a lot of actors are told that and that makes them just spiral and then that's how they burn out. Instead of just remembering, hey, I actually don't know what I'm doing right now and I don't know what's next for me. And that can be pretty scary, but I'm okay with that because at one point, exactly. Because at one point, I was a 17-year-old kid that never knew Mindy Kaling was going to tweet an open casting call. And I couldn't have predicted this. So how am I going to predict the next, you know, year of my life, couple of months? Who knows? Right?
That's amazing. I feel so good because I have nothing lined up.
That's okay. No, that is so okay. Who, like, truly?
Yeah. No, this is great.
You're
this
vibing.
This is my therapy session, by three.
Good.
It totally
because
is.
Don't even tell me you have nothing lined up. You have maybe nothing lined up of a project, but do you have things that you do with your life that
Absolutely.
Make you who you are outside
Absolutely.
Of your work?
Absolutely.
Congratulations. You have things lined up. One of my favorite things I said in an interview was someone saying like, so what are you going to do next? You just filmed season 4. What are you going to do next? That's the last season. That must be pretty daunting. And then I said, I'm taking a vacation. I'm going on a trip. and I'm taking a vacation. And that's a pretty exciting project for me. That's all you need. You have things lined up. They just might not be work things, but they are still very valid things that make you you, right?
Mm, yeah.
So, yeah, wow, you got things lined up.
Thank you, Maitri. That was an amazing chat. Wow.
I'm glad.
Wow, I'd be up all night thinking about everything you said. But thank you so much. This was really nice. And thank you for being so open. But I like to do this thing where I do like a little takeaway that I learned from my guest at the end of the episode. What have I learned from you? Oh my God, there's so much. Well, one thing, Maitri Ramakrishnan does not mix up her life and her work. They're very separate things. Do not ask her what she's doing next. And lastly, she wants to move people, but she also wants people to stick with her. You know, that song that you put on in your car on the radio as you're going back home. That's my three for you. Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure, and I wish you all the best.
You were listening to How I'm a Saba only on Luminary. How I'm a Saba is produced by Monisha Singhatyal and Rainshine Entertainment. Ritika Bajaj is our creative producer and Palash Kulkarni is our executive producer. The research for this episode was done by Anushka Mukherjee. The mix engineer for this episode is Ankit Thakur. Artist management by Versus Entertainment, LLP. The music supervisor for the episode is Ankur Srivastav. The episode was recorded at Bayout Studios, Mumbai.